Central Jersey Talk Radio, Central Jersey 1450, WCTC with the Restaurant Guys. Call them now at 732-545-9282. 732-545-9282.
Hello, everybody, and good morning. You are listening to The Restaurant Guys. I'm Mark Pascal here with Francis Schott. Together, we own Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi restaurants in New Brunswick, New Jersey, and we're here to give you the inside track on food, wine, and the finer things in life. You can listen to us every day from 11 to noon. Reach us through restaurantguysradio.com or download our podcast on iTunes. And Francis has a smirk on his face. I'm afraid of what he's going to say.
You're a mind reader, because I was thinking, you're so cute when you get all into the intro. When you get all into the intro like that, you're just all gung-ho on
it's
that.
It's morning. I'm waking myself up when you along with me.
God almighty. Anyway, hi.
Hey, how you doing? Just the smirk. The smirk scared me, I got to tell you.
Because that's where I was going. I was going to tell you that you were all cute when you go all fired up like that. We are going to talk today with Craig Manoa about organic foods later on the show. He's with the Organic Consumers Association. He's been on the show before, and he's an interesting fella. And there's actually a couple of lawsuits flying around about organic dairies, and there's some confusing issues that we're going to clarify for everybody. But before that, I want to talk about a piece that appeared in the New York Times recently, and it discusses the McDonald's new move toward salads. Mm-hmm. And I think that's very interesting because McDonald's has responded to the public sort of outcry with this, with a campaign, so they say, to have more healthy foods, so they say.
Right. I mean, you want to be able to bring your kids there and have some alternatives and be able to, because let's face it, if you have kids in the world today, sooner or later they're going to end up in a McDonald's. You want them to have some more choices.
Well, and what's interesting is McDonald's is spending a lot of money on advertising campaigns that tout its healthy choices and how healthy you can be at McDonald's. However, well, what's going on there ain't so healthy. And the article in the Times by Melanie Warner, who's an investigative reporter, she starts with Chris Riviere and Shamel Jackson reviewed the menu on a recent afternoon at McDonald's in Union Square in Manhattan. They reviewed the menu, which included a variety of healthy options, including salads and fruits, and then they each ordered the usual, the chicken McNugget sandwich from the dollar menu and the fried and fries and the McFlurry shake.
Which is what kids generally will move towards if they're not, you know, if there's not an adult with them.
Well,
and even if there is an adult with them.
How do you take your kid to McDonald's and make him get the salad?
Right.
You know, I'm not saying I have the answer to this, but I'm saying I'm not believing the whole McDonald's will have a healthier alternative vibe here, or we're really doing healthy stuff. Because if you look at it, what's going on is they've introduced these dollar menus, and all the stuff that you can get for a dollar is, you know, you can get the double cheeseburger, you can get the fries, you can get all of the worst.
The McChicken or whatever the name of that sandwich is.
And
the press chicken extruded into some kind of sugared breadcrumb material and then fried.
Doesn't sound so good the way you say it.
No, it's not. By the way, it doesn't taste so good no matter how anybody says it. I actually bought these not that long ago just to see what they were.
Mm-hmm.
How disgusting. I mean,
nuggets of death?
I haven't had them since I was a little kid.
Mm-hmm.
Well, a big little kid, I guess I was.
Yeah, you.
But I just can't believe what they're made of. It's like this sponge material, Francis.
Yeah, it's not even chicken.
You wouldn't believe it if you tear one of these things open
and look at it.
It doesn't look like chicken.
Yeah.
It looks like this spongy like press board.
Yeah.
It looks like press board. That's the best way to describe it.
Well, listen here. The enormous success of the dollar menu, where all items cost a dollar, has helped stimulate for McDonald's 36 consecutive months of sales growth and stores open at least a year. In 3 years, revenues increased by 33%, and its shares have rocketed 170%, a remarkable turnaround for a company that only 4 years ago seemed to be going nowhere. Well, what's interesting is their marketing campaign is all based on their salads, and their profits are all based on the selling more burgers than ever before. And here's an interesting thing when you talk about economies and when you talk about getting kids involved and what we have to understand as a society and teach our kids. The nutritionists say fast food is one of the worst things in the American diet because of its calories, trans fats, lack of fiber, added sugars, and processed carbohydrates. here's an interesting, Connie Schneider, who's a nutrition advisor for Fresno County, California, she says, if you're looking at the dollar menu in terms of how much food you get, it really appears to be a good bargain. But if you're looking at it for how many nutrients you get for the dollar, it's the least economical. And I'll add that if you look at what's going to happen to your kids if they eat at McDonald's 5 nights a week, and there is a change. I mean, when I was a kid, we'd go to McDonald's once a month or something mm-hmm. like that. Kids are eating there all the time.
Yep.
You know, and they have their own money, and they go, you know, they have them in school lunchrooms, and we need to return a certain amount of moderation to that and realize that it's something that's really bad for you and a guilty pleasure once in a while. But it's become a meal replacement.
And it's the way it's marketed. I mean, I remember being a 15, 16-year-old kid. I wanted to go to McDonald's whenever I could.
Right.
Okay? And as a 15 or 16-year-old, I could go all the time.
Mm-hmm.
I could go whenever I wanted.
Right.
Because I was 15 or 16, I could go right from football practice to the McDonald's, be home. I had my own money from my paper route or from my supermarket job or wherever I was working at the time. And to spend a dollar on at McDonald's, piece of cake.
You know, here's another issue. The dollar menu ads, which have been a remarkable success, there are certain ads that they have aimed at, they isolate the Hispanic market and the black market. And dollar menu ads aimed at young blacks and Hispanics often focus on how much food can be bought for just a dollar. A message many young consumers are eager to hear. And also, those messages resonate in low-income neighborhoods. Mm-hmm. You get a bargain, like how much food you can get for a buck. And, you know, what's the old line? You need more food in your food?
But that's yeah, exactly. You need more food in your food. But that's such a short-term answer. I mean, you're talking about, and people are saying, oh, you're offering low-income people an alternative. You know, one of the things the article reads is, you know, while that might help many low-income customers save money, there's a heavy health cost to that.
Yeah.
There's when you talk about somebody getting diabetes because they ate hamburgers every day for their whole life or McDonald's hamburgers every day for their whole life. Now, the other thing I want to point out, and we've talked about this in the show a number of times, if you are spending a dollar for a fast food cheeseburger, okay, you know they're making money on that cheeseburger. Think about making it at home. If you took bread and lettuce and tomatoes and cheese, real cheese, and a real piece of beef, and put it between a sandwich bun, it would cost you more than a dollar.
Right. And so what does that mean? Where does it come from? How do they get it?
So they're cutting corners somewhere, somehow, because you know that they've established. They're saying, this article makes it very clear, they're making money on that dollar menu, they're making money on every item they sell.
Yeah, but
okay, it's not a lost leader. It's not that they're trying to get you in, and it is partially that they're trying to get you in to sell you other things, but they're also making money on these dollar items. But there's only one way to do that.
But the fact of the matter is, do I think that McDonald's shouldn't exist? No, I don't think that McDonald's shouldn't exist.
I agree with you.
But do I think they should be allowed to advertise to children? No, I don't believe they should be allowed to advertise to children. And I think that we as a society really need to be turning a very careful eye to making sure that that is an occasional indulgence. And where our society has really gone wrong is where we've allowed fast food to become
food,
the diet.
Food.
And that's why we're getting into so much trouble. Hey, listen, we're going to be talking about organic food and really good food with Craig Manoa from the Organic Consumers Association in just a moment. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:15. Hey, everybody, and welcome back. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Mark and Francis of Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi Restaurants in downtown New Brunswick. Our guest today is our friend Craig Manoa. He's an environmental scientist with the Organic Consumers Association. He joins us today to speak with us about problems with the organic food industry, as well as maybe mad cow disease and a few other things we'll entice him to talk about. Hi, Craig. Welcome back.
Hi. How are you doing?
Hey,
Craig. Great.
Very nice to have you back on the show.
Oh, thanks for having me back.
Now, what's going on with I've read about some lawsuits recently with organic standards, and there's quite a bit of controversy over what seemed to be a fairly simple and straightforward idea that organic foods from family farms were what the market was demanding, and the picture looked rosy and bright as the demand had increased for especially things like organic milk. But there's trouble on the horizon. Am I right about that?
Yes, you are right about that. This has actually been kind of an ongoing battle in the organics industry for the past few years, ever since the organic standards were initially implemented and actually while they were being written. But it's kind of come to a head lately just because the organic industry is booming. It's the fastest growing sect of the food marketplace right now and has been for the past 13 years. But it's so profitable that we're seeing companies like Kraft and now Walmart's getting into it too. Some of these major behemoths that might have kind of opposed that historically and supported some of the more the industrial agricultural techniques in the past, but now they're seeing the profit potential there.
But isn't that a victory for us? Don't we want them to see the profit potential? Don't we want them to see the upside of doing things the right way?
Definitely. And if they were adhering to sort of the spirit of the organic standards and the current organic standards, then that would definitely be a victory. But the problem that we're seeing is that they're starting to take advantage of loopholes in the organic standards, and they're also working to weaken the organic standards. So that's been the issue.
So what they realize is profitable is to have the word organic on the package, but they're not necessarily committed to doing what it takes to get that.
Exactly. So if you take Kraft Foods, for example, they've got their macaroni and cheese, which is mostly made up of processed ingredients. And under the organic standards, you can't use processed, there's a lot of synthetic ingredients that you can't use.
Mm-hmm.
And so what happened late last year was companies like Kraft stepped into the organic legislation arena and basically strong-armed a new bill that weakened the organic standards.
How does it?
That's what we need. We need weaker organic standards. That's it. Now we're going down the right road. Let's get the large corporations involved so that they can weaken the organic standards.
So how did they weaken it? What do they get worked in there?
They slipped a rider into the agricultural appropriations bill of 2006. So it's this massive bill that has been laboriously put together, and then last minute a rider was popped onto there that basically bypassed the National Organic Standards Board. And what that is that's a panel of experts from varying fields within the organic industry that advises the government on different types of synthetics that should or should not be allowed in the organic standard.
So they bypassed it in what way? They got something allowed that heretofore was not allowed?
Right. Not specific ingredients at this point, but basically what the rider did is it puts a lot more power in the hands of the Secretary of Agriculture. So a single individual now can make the decision regarding what sorts of synthetics are allowed in organic foods. And unfortunately, the Secretary of Agriculture is one of the heaviest lobbyist people at the USDA. So, you know, you get Kraft in there.
It's a political position. You've now taken this and put it in the hands of a politician instead of in the hands of a group of organic experts.
Right, a politician somebody that hasn't even been voted into that position. That person is appointed to that position from the presidential administration. And unfortunately, that person oftentimes is a representative of industry. For example, our last Secretary of Agriculture was Ann Benneman, and she used to work for Monsanto, so she had a lot of interest in the biotech industry.
And Monsanto is one of the largest food companies in the world, and so you have this weird revolving door, especially with this particular cabinet post, where the Secretary of Agriculture is a former lobbyist for Monsanto and then goes back to work for Monsanto and then comes back to work for the Department of Agriculture.
If you listen to the show every day or even every week, you've heard us talk about Monsanto. Monsanto is one of the largest producers of genetically modified foods in the world. So,
correct.
Right. I mean,
and one of the biggest opponents of organic foods.
You know what I think is very interesting? I mean, I think a fair way to characterize this as corporate agribusiness for a long time pointed to organic food as, you know, you're a bunch of hippies and it doesn't matter and you're standing in the way of progress and, you know, how dare you, you know, do that.
By the way, 10 years ago, I might have been one of those guys.
Well, but then what's funny is the organic movement starts to, you know, people start to realize that they want this in their food and they create the demand and we educate the people to support the local family farm. And then all of a sudden it goes from, oh, you commie pinkos, you don't know what you're doing, to, wait a second, there's money in it. Hold on. But and like Mark said, if these corporations want to come in and start producing food in what we know as organically, without exploiting loopholes to try and get that name on the label as cheaply as possible, that's a very different thing. Do you agree, Craig?
Exactly. And I should note that although this bill has passed, it hasn't changed the foods that are on the market right now. So for consumers that are listening to this program right now, there aren't any companies that have reformulated their products. There are companies that have proposed, there's a list of 500 new synthetic chemicals that companies want to have allowed in under the organic standards.
No, I mean, so if it's a synthetic chemical, isn't that just antithetical to being organic?
Well, yes. Right now there are some, quote-unquote, non-agricultural ingredients that are allowed in organic foods that are on a special list. And that's the national list for the organic standards. And those are ingredients like, you know, baking soda. You know, it's not agriculturally derived. Or
right.
Ingredients like carbon dioxide to put the bubbles in your organic beverage.
But hey, listen, when we come back, we're going to be talking more with Craig Manoa, and we're going to be specifically talking about what's perhaps the most in-demand sector of the organic food market, which is organic milk. And there's some funny business and shenanigans going on there that you might want to know about. We're talking with Craig Manoa. We're the Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:25.
Today we are proud to present Jackie Naylor.
Love me, leave me, left me.
Once upon a time, New Year's Eve was a night for swank jazz, champagne, and caviar. Ring in 2007 at just such a gathering with us. The Restaurant Guys present a New Year's Eve jazz concert at the Crossroads Theater starring Ms. Jackie Naylor. Jackie's been called the new voice of jazz by Vogue magazine. Jazz Times says, in the never-ending Next Big Thing sweepstakes, bet on Jackie Naylor. She's headlined internationally, she's played with Michael McDonald and David Sanborn, and on New Year's Eve, she'll play to a sold-out crowd at the Crossroads Theater right next to our restaurants. Dine before or after the show at either one of our acclaimed restaurants. There are hotel accommodations within walking distance, one of the best jazz singers in the country, two of the best restaurants in the state, an evening not to be forgotten. Go to stageleft.com or Catherine Lombardi.com for details, reservations, and menus, or call 732-828-4444. Put the swank back in New Year's Eve. Spend it with the Restaurant Guys. Hey, you're back at the Restaurant Guys. Mark and Francis of Stage Left and Captain Lombardi Restaurants in downtown New Brunswick, and our guest today is Craig Manoa. He's an environmental scientist with the Organic Consumers Association, and we're talking about what's going on with organic food right now. Now, I think that one of the most enheartening developments in the last couple of years is that basically demand outstrips supply for organic milk, and I think that's because the kind of things that we were finding in milk were particularly objectionable to a lot of consumers.
Well, also, that's one of the first foods you feed your child.
So, but what's going on with that situation where there's such a pressure on the supply there? There's actually shortages of organic milk. People are running out of it. What's going on?
Basically, the problem is that it's really difficult in the United States for a conventional farmer to make the transition to organic farming. And that's the case with standard crops, and that's also the case with dairy production. Whereas in Europe, you've got a governmental subsidy system that helps conventional farmers make that transition.
Well, we have a subsidy system here. Doesn't that go to our farmer?
That was a lob.
Yeah, no, nowhere near. Of the agricultural subsidies that we have right now, less than 0.1% goes to organic farming.
You just said 0.1% goes to organic farming.
Exactly.
Shame on us.
The rest of it goes to subsidizing the purchase of pesticides and synthetic fertilizers, and that's just the way the subsidy system is built. And so that it makes it really difficult for a farmer to make that transition, even if they want to.
Why can't we change that? Why can't we make the subsidies go? Because if you ask the average American person, do you want the subsidy to go to the huge agribusiness farm that's going to plant more corn than the country needs and use more resources in which to do it, if you ask them, do you want to give the money to that person or do you want to give the money to the small family farmer, almost every single person in this country is going to say, I want to give it to the small family farmer. Why are we having so much trouble making that?
That's definitely the case. I mean, we do tabling at all different types of events, you know, fairs and festivals, and we've got a whole gamut of issues that we work on with the Organic Consumers Association, but this issue in particular, I can't think of a single time that we've had somebody disagree with us on this, because the Farm Bill was originally designed in the 1940s to help family farmers, but it shifted so much that 85% of the Farm Bill funding goes to factory farms.
I'm going to ask a straight out question. Is it just corruption? Why can't we make this transition? Why can't we send that money to where the American public wants it to be sent?
A problem really is with the way our whole system is built. There's so much power put in the hands of lobbyists.
Right, and the small family farmer doesn't have a lobbyist to send to Washington.
Exactly. You've got big agribusiness with lots of money sending highly paid professional lobbyists to Washington, and they get what they want. And that's basically why the Farm Bill has been resculpted so dramatically over the past couple of decades. But it is up to bat again in 2007, and so we're going to be putting a lot of work on trying to shift that and helping farmers make that transition to organic.
And we're going to put a link on our website to the Organic Consumers Association, and so you can get in touch with Craig and see what you can do. You know, there is no greater misconception. People think, oh, well, I don't mind subsidizing the farm bill. I don't mind we're subsidizing the family farms. You're not. You're subsidizing the big corporate agribusiness farms who are trying to run the family farms off their land.
Most of those farmers would rather have no subsidies whatsoever. Most of those small family farmers would rather they eliminate the farm subsidy.
Well, anyway, we'll be talking more with Craig Minoa, and we'll be talking about dairy and the milk on your counter and your shelf when we come back from the news. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 1130.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back. You are listening to The Restaurant Guys. I'm Mark Pascal here with Francis Schott. Together, we own Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi restaurants in New Brunswick, New Jersey. We're here to give you the inside track on food, wine, and the finer things in life. You can listen to us every day from 11 to noon. Reach us through restaurantguysradio.com or download our podcast on iTunes.
Craig Minoa is our guest today. He's an environmental scientist with the Organic Consumers Association. He joins us today to speak with us about organic food in general, and we're going to talk about milk and maybe some compromises that are happening or threaten the organic industry. Now, Craig, one of the things that people have the most interest in organic food, one of the things that's seen one of the most meteoric rise is the interest in organic milk. Now, I go to my local store and I see the organic milk, and it's always got like a picture of a cow idyllically grazing on a pasture
under a tree.
It's so pretty,
sitting in the shade.
Is that what it's like, really?
For the vast majority of organic milk, that is what it's like, but there are a couple of companies right now that are taking advantage of a loophole in the organic standards and essentially creating organic dairy products by raising cattle in factory farm settings.
Let's describe for a moment before we go any further the difference between that cow grazing on that field under that tree with the birds chirping, and what a factory farm dairy cow lives like.
Yeah, exactly. A cow that's raised on a family farm could traditionally be considered a free range cow. I mean, they're out
right.
in the fields, they're eating grass, they're well taken care of, and a factory farm cow is in intensive confinement feedlot, so there's not much access to the outdoors. When they do get outside, it's just a feedlot that's covered in manure. They're fed grain, which isn't natural for a cow to eat.
Hold on a second. Let's just review for a moment. We'll call it a confinement dairy. Sounds like prison. And when they do go outside, they walk around in a field covered in manure, not grass.
Yeah, I wouldn't even call it a field. It's more of like a concrete slab outside of the main massive shed.
Sounds delicious. Go on, please.
These feedlots, one of them in particular, which is run by Aurora Dairy, have 4,000 cattle confined into massive barns. These cattle are just put into their small stalls. They're fed their grains. They're standing in their own feces. They're hooked up to machines that milk them, and that milk goes out and is stamped with the USDA organic seal. So the average consumer that thinks that when they're paying extra for that organic dairy, and they think it's coming from that happy cow on the outside of the carton that's frolicking in the fields and whatnot, in actuality, it's a completely different story.
Now, we think of organic as kind of a definite line, but it seems like what you're saying is here there's a continuum. There are there farms that are more organic and farms that are less organic, or are these people just kind of scoffing the law and ignoring it?
Definitely so, and this is two companies. One of them, unfortunately, too, is Horizon, which is one of the more common dairy products that you'll find out there. And Horizon is split now too. They've got a couple of large factory farms out west, and then they're trying to, just because of consumer pressure and the news that that they are doing the factory farming, they're trying to invest money in bringing more family farmers into the organics realm. But Aurora is straight up just factory farm out there. And I don't know necessarily about continuum. It's more that there's a loophole in the standards that says that the cattle must be given access to the outdoors. That's all it says, and it doesn't say specifically how much access or, you know, what the outdoor setting should be like. And so these companies are basically saying, you know, they get outside once every couple of days and, you know, they're under the sun. It doesn't matter that they're not in an actual field or anything like that.
They're in the driveway covered in manure.
Exactly. Well, there were actually a couple of slaughterhouses, too, that were selling organic beef, and they took advantage of that loophole in the standards and said, well, they were given access to the outdoors when they walked from the walked from the factory farm into the truck to head to the slaughterhouse.
And that's their outside area. Now, there's a lawsuit pending, right? The Arthur Harvey lawsuit. What's that all about?
That ties back to what we were talking about initially in this conversation, is that rider that was slipped into the agricultural appropriations bill in 2006. The Arthur Harvey lawsuit was launched by a farmer named Arthur Harvey. He was an organic blueberry farmer, and he didn't like that loophole in the standards, the loophole that allowed cattle to be raised on factory farms and the product to be sold as organic. So he launched a lawsuit against the USDA, saying that that just completely violates the organic standards, the Organic Food Production Act. What happened from that was a little bit more than he expected. Basically, the ruling said, okay, you're right, that loophole needs to be changed, but also no non-agricultural synthetics should be allowed in organic products. So that kicked out baking soda, that kicked out, you know, carbon dioxide for the bubble, that kicked out all these ingredients that we've used mm-hmm. for baking since, you know, our great grandparents.
Right.
And then that ultimately fueled industry to come up with some sort of law that would sort of repair that and allow some of the synthetics back in. But that rider, as I said, that slipped in actually did more than repair the standards. It basically put a gaping hole in it where lots of synthetics get slipped in.
I just want to go back to milk for one second, Craig.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you're buying milk on the shelf, what brands are you avoiding? Organic milk. What brands are you avoiding? What brands do you think are some of the better ones?
If you have the option and you see a horizon there but there's an alternative.
I mean, a lot of stores, just so you know, a lot of stores do offer 3, 4, 5 different brands of organic milk.
Exactly. And as I said, the fortunate thing is that there's really only two companies that are taking advantage of this loophole. But they're also two of the companies that are more commonly found. So if you do have the alternative, if you've got an option to the Horizon brand, I would choose the alternative.
Mm-hmm.
But Aurora Factory Farm Dairy is sell themselves to private labeling. So if you buy wild oats milk, that's actually from the Aurora factory.
I think that's important for people to know. So
yeah, they actually, Aurora makes for Safeway, Wild Oats, and Costco.
Exactly, yep. Yeah.
So
the organic milk in those places, we might say, might be less organic than...
Yeah, it's still better than buying the conventional milk, but if you've got an option, you know, companies like Organic Valley, they're strictly made up of a large co-op of family farmers.
And I'll tell you, just as somebody who drinks a fair amount of organic milk versus non-organic milk as well, and now before organic milk was available... Organic Valley is one of those milks that you can taste the difference. You know, we talk about tasting the difference in the way some of these foods are prepared and what we feed these animals. Organic Valley tastes better than
I got to throw one other dairy out there. There's a really great artisanal little dairy that makes it's pasteurized, but it's non-homogenized milk. It's called Ronnie Brook Farms, and it's in New York. And we'll put a link up to Ronnie Brook Farms on our website. And I'll tell you what else we're going to put up on our website. There's a group called Cornucopia, and their website is www.cornucopia.org. And they have pretty much rated all of the dairies, and they give them from 1 cow to 5 cows, 1 cow being substandard, and I think Aurora got a 1 cow. And it goes up. So if you want to find out where to find milk that probably meets your standards and comes from a good place, that's a good place to go. We'll put that up on our website, which is restaurantguysradio.com, and you can check that out. And, Craig, are you familiar with the Cornucopia study?
Oh, definitely. Yeah, we're actually good friends with them over there. That was a great study. Of course, Horizon and Aurora were very unhappy with it, said that it was biased and whatnot, but they were also the two farms that rated really poorly on it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The really good news from the study was that the vast majority of organic dairy farms out there are doing exactly what consumers would expect from an organic dairy farm.
Well, that is good news.
And this comes entirely from consumer pressure. So it's you being intelligent out there and going and demanding it and being willing to pay for it, and you know what? Then the industry responds. Hey, we're talking with Craig Manoa from the Organic Consumers Alliance. We'll be back with him in just a moment. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 1145.
Floors, walls, and lighting. The Restaurant Guys learned long ago that the key to making a space look great are floors, walls, and lighting. There's no tougher test to a carpet than a busy restaurant. From design to installation to cleaning, the Gillespie Group has handled The Restaurant Guys restaurant floors for more than 10 years. Designers know what looks great on the first day. Bob Gillespie knows what will continue to look great year after year. Gillespie doesn't just install carpets. Their quality clean division has experience and expertise to keep that carpet looking great. In our business, it's the details that matter. In your home or office, the details make a lasting impression. The Gillespie Group handles projects from large hotels to offices right down to your living room. Look down. Go on, look down. Right there by your feet. You see, you need the Gillespie Group. Call them at 732-254-5508 or visit them at thegillespiegroup.com. Tell them the Restaurant Guys sent you and get a free cleaning with any installation. Remember, it's Gillespie for carpet and flooring, 732-254-5508.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys. Mark and Francis of Catherine Lombardi and Stage Left Restaurants in downtown New Brunswick. Our guest is Craig Manoa. He's an environmental scientist with the Organic Consumers Association. Now, Craig, we focused on some of the controversy that people are dealing with to protect organic standards, but I want to ask you, there are two issues that we deal with a lot. One is organic and healthy food, and the other is keeping family farmers on the farm. Has the increased demand for organic food, has that been a lifeline to family farmers?
Definitely so. In fact, if you poll consumers, asking them, you know, why they're buying organic foods, typically the third reason that they're purchasing those foods is because they believe that it's come from family farmers. And that is the case, too, if you, as far as analysis of the agricultural fact, those family farmers that have made the transition to organic are 80% more likely to hold on to the family farm and to have recognizable profits every single year.
Now, why is that, do you think?
I think it's just as far as organic farming goes, it's easier to do on smaller plots. It's more difficult to do in an industrial agricultural setting. So conventional farming has been able to take over all sorts of family farms and put them into a conglomerate, large, singleized plot. Whereas with the organic farming, you really need to do it on a smaller scale.
But we touched on this earlier. Don't we absolutely need some of these large farms to change the way they do their practices? Because Walmart's going to have its large farms. Okay, they're going to have the giant agribusiness farms. They're not going away. Don't we need them to change their ways? Isn't there some way that we can get them to move towards where we want them to be?
I think you can have large farms. You can have large plots of land. It's all really just how you're managing that land. And I don't, as far as Walmart needing to have it on an industrial agriculture level, I don't think that's really the case.
I'm not saying they need to have it. I'm saying they're going to have it.
Right.
That's a possibility, but then we're seeing success from, like I was saying, with companies like Organic Valley, where they're able to offer a very affordable product to consumers by building a massive network of organic farmers.
Mm-hmm.
It's really just a different way of approaching the supply and demand spectrum.
Well, now, what is in the future for organic farmers? And this is one thing that is concerning. As corporate agribusiness sees that there's profit to be had by having organic on the label, the way that these family farmers that it became a lifeline to them and they used it to be profitable was to do something different to where they then had the advantage, because in organic farming, the small scale is better, and people were willing to pay a higher price for their harder work and better product. Now, if corporations start to figure out how to mass produce organic produce, does this propose
or change the law so that organic can be put on the label.
No, but what I'm saying is even if they don't change the law, if these large corporations can now start to produce organically, do we have a new threat to the family farm then? What's your thought, Craig?
I don't think so, because I do believe we're going to close this loophole as far as organic dairy goes,
mm-hmm.
and as far as organic produce goes. As we're seeing oil peaking, we're going to see our whole food system change, in the sense that right now food travels 2,000 miles on average from farm to fork. And so industrial agriculture is really dependent on low oil prices. And as the oil prices continue to rise, we're going to see more localized farming practices. So communities will best be able to afford supporting their local organic farmers.
We have to go back over that because you just glazed over it for 1 second. You said that right now food travels 2,000 miles on average from farm to fork. Okay.
Exactly.
So you're talking about your apple that's grown in Argentina and eaten in New York. You're talking about your corn that's grown in Nebraska and eaten in Seattle, Washington. You're talking about just
your strawberries from Chile and Guatemala. And the problem with that is these really they consume a lot of fossil fuels. They consume a lot of fossil fuels in the making of them, because fossil fuels are used in making of synthetic pesticides and fertilizers and things like that. And then when you ship something so far, one of the things that's fundamentally changed in this corporate sort of the way our food supply works now is, for all of time, the goal of a species is to expend fewer calories in creating food that has more calories, and that's how you stay alive. Well, when you consider the calories that we burn in fossil fuels, I read a statistic with it that says that for every 1 calorie of food we generate, between human expenditure and fossil fuels, we spend 7 calories to get it of non-renewable fuel sources. Is that not crazy?
Yeah, it's totally insane. And as the oil prices are peaking, I was just out there in Jersey and New York last week, and I was seeing $3.15 at some gas stations.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to see that reflected on the prices of the products that we're buying off of our grocery shelves, just because of that transportation need. But we're also going to see a benefit as far as localized family farming goes. We're going to see a shift back to localized farming, and that's a beautiful thing.
And one of the maxims of mine and Francis' life is eat seasonally.
Yeah.
Eat food that's in season. And Francis and I aren't saying, you know, never buy something from Guatemala, never buy import things from France, because we do eat those kinds of foods, and we eat them all the time. But make the mainstay of your food to local, and you can change the world.
Craig, thanks for coming on the show. You've been great.
Thanks for having me. You have a wonderful program.
Thanks a lot, Craig. We're gonna put up a link to the Organic Consumers Association, and you can learn more about this kind of stuff on our website, restaurantguysradio.com. We'll be back in just a moment. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:55. Hey, you're back with the Restaurant Guys, Mark and Francis of Catherine Lombardi and Stage Left Restaurants in downtown New Brunswick. And, you know, we started the show, we were talking with Craig Manoa from the Organic Consumers Association, which is an interesting group because there are all sorts of organic producers alliances, but that's an organization for people who are interested in consuming organic food. And you should go check them out and join them if you are an organic consumer, as we are. But we started the show talking about McDonald's and their sort of faux drive to be healthier, a healthier influence on
our
culture.
They don't have a lot of organics in their particular repertoire.
Yeah, well, and they don't have a lot of healthy in there going on there either. But here, in response to that, this was emailed to us, in response to that article that appeared in the New York Times about the Burger King having more salads on the menu but making their profit on their burger sales going up since they lowered the price to $1. This is entitled Fast Food Still Bad, letter to the editor from the New York Times. Thank you for the article, Salads or No, Cheap Burgers Revive McDonald's. That was front page. Exposing McDonald's salad scam. Calling something a salad doesn't make it healthy. Good point. Except for the apple walnut variety, which they always refer to, the fast food giant's premium salads are nutrition disasters. The bacon ranch salad with crispy chicken packs 31 grams of fat. That's half of your daily allotment.
Happy salad.
And a whopping 70% of the daily recommended amount of salt. That's your salad for you. Essentially, McDonald's has dumped the contents of a chicken sandwich on top of some lettuce and serves it with a creamy dressing. Touting its premium salads gives the false impression that the company sells healthy food and that customers have many choices. And I think they don't. The letter writer is Michelle Simon. She's the founder and director of the Center for Informed Food Choices in Oakland, California. And we're going to try and get her on the show.
Thanks for the letter, Michelle. That was awesome.
Dumped the contents of its chicken sandwich on top of some lettuce. Doesn't make it a salad. You didn't fool me. You didn't fool me.
Well, and croutons instead of bread. You're pretty much you're all there. You're ready to go.
Yeah. If you ever
shave some cheese over the
top.
You
can go to McDonald's website and read the nutritional information of the salads. But then in a separate place, you have to go and read what's in the dressing, which is basically like a
that's a little switcheroo, sneakeroo. We get it.
Most of those dressings are like little warm, shelf-stable milkshakes in a package that you put on your lettuce. It's really, really no better for you than that.
That will still be there at the end of World War III.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I hope you've enjoyed the hour listening to The Restaurant Guys. Sometimes we talk about the finer things in life, and sometimes, like today, we talk about how to get there. I hope you've enjoyed the hour listening to The Restaurant Guys. Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 12 noon.